In 1992, it appeared on the hamburger patties of fast food, sickening hundreds and killing some. As a consequence, we learned how to cook a hamburger and scrub the kitchen counter. But over the past 15 years, it has attacked us 26 more times that we know of. Only now, it rides on the leafy greens of from the nation's salad bowl. Today, we pause to ask, can agriculture protect us from E. coli 015787?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 528th edition of the Food Chain. Or, hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in San Jose del Cabo who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Dave Michaels on the boards. Hello, Dave.
Glad to be here.
Producer Rebecca Rukeyser.
Hello.
She'll be working the phones for Carol Stafford today, who is out. Folks, in late 1992, 600 people were stricken with a violent intestinal disorder from eating jack-in-the-box hamburgers. The problem? A new variant of our old friend, the E. coli bacteria. Now, many of us are already too familiar with E. coli, as it was the bacteria that brought us the turistas. But this new variant of E. coli proved to be much more dangerous than our old friend, as it emits a deadly Shiga toxin that is capable of ruining our livers and even taking our lives. This new weaponized E. coli was named E. coli 015787. 015787 has since been found in municipal water systems, apple ciders, daycare centers, petting zoos, and the nation's salad bowl. In fact, since 1993, there have been 26 E. coli 015787 outbreaks traced to leafy green vegetables. Recently, a single outbreak took the lives of three, sickened hundreds, and cost farmers a cool $100 million or so. 110,000 of us are now being stricken by the E. coli 015787 every year, and many fingers are being pointed to California farmers. And so today we pause to ask, can agriculture protect us from E. coli 015787? Here to help us find an answer, we have some of the stars of production agriculture in California. Start with Tim Chelling, who's a vice president of Western Growers Association. Tim, welcome to the Food Chain.
Good morning. Thank you, Michael.
Western Growers Association. What the heck is that?
Western Growers is a policy trade association representing approximately 3,000 growers and shippers in California and Arizona. That's about 90% of the fresh produce industry in California. And total, the membership represents about half of the nation's produce industry.
Okay. And who pays the way?
Who
pays the way? For the Western growers, where do you get your...
This is a membership dues.
So you're a membership funded...
Okay. We have an insurance side, mm-hmm. So we are a trade and policy association advocates for the industry.
Okay, good. Also with us today, we have Richard Nutter, who is a former Monterey County Ag Commissioner and now consultant for the Santa Cruz County Farm Bureau. Dick, welcome to the Food Chain.
Good morning.
Get up on that microphone a little bit. Yeah, just pull it up to you there. You have this great radio voice, and we don't want to lose it with this there. How long were you the Monterey County Ag Commissioner?
Well, I was County Agricultural Commissioner for 28 years.
Ooh.
I also served as Santa Cruz County Ag Commissioner simultaneously during the mid-80s, so I've got about 40 years involved in the regulatory business in Santa Cruz, Monterey County.
So you've seen a lot of growth and development in the leafy green industry, right? You've been there, from the beginning almost?
I've seen when there were under 1,000 acres of mixed vegetables in the Salinas Valley, under a couple thousand acres of broccoli going up to 75,000 or more, and the way that the growth has come over the last few years, a lot of it dictated by the bag salad products, has helped increase that acreage.
All right. A lot of changes in that industry. Before the show, you were talking about actually how if you turn your head everything changes and leaves you in the dust. It does change quickly, doesn't it?
The dynamics of agriculture are probably more than most people would even imagine, because there's nuances of things that are going on in the fields every day. You know, the widening of beds, the way that they're cooling products, the extension of shelf life, the new seeds that they're developing, all those things have contributed to this new explosion and with this packaged salad products.
Also with us today, we have Joe Pizzini, who's the Vice President of Ocean Mist Farms. Joe, welcome to the food chain.
Good morning, Michael.
Ocean Mist Farms. Tell us about Ocean Mist Farms.
Ocean Mist Farms is an 83-year-old grower-shipper company.
You're actually out there in the field growing the food we eat.
That's true. That's absolutely right. I also am the current chairman of the Grower-Shipper Association of Central California.
And that is?
That is an organization of growers and shippers in the Tri-County area. So that's San Benito, Monterey, and Santa Cruz counties.
Mm-hmm. Folks out there in the world have had an artichoke. It's probably from you guys, right?
That's right. We're the largest.
You probably laid your hand on that artichoke personally.
Somewhere along the way, that's right.
Let's see. Let's start from the top here. Dick, I'd like to start with you if possible. In all of your years as an ag commissioner, have you ever seen anything so potentially devastating as this E. coli 015787?
I don't believe so, because this is, you know, across the board. It impacts on just about every segment of the agricultural community. At times, there's things that only affect the livestock industry or maybe one particular, the people that grow broccoli or the head lettuce people. But this is affecting everybody. Even those that aren't growing vegetable crops. Yes.
In what way? I mean, it's obvious that those who are growing leafy greens are impacted, but what about the rest of us?
Well, there's concerns about how this organism is contaminating the vegetable products. And is it coming from the nearby pastures? Is it coming from the livestock? Is it coming from kids that raise 4-H animals nearby on a ranch? All those things make people suspicious, and I believe that there's been quite a bit overreaction in terms of how they're going to respond to this whole incident because of the potential of these things contaminating the product that's going out to the nation's consumers.
Joe, before the show, you were talking about your daughter, I believe, is in 4-H in the Salinas Valley. And how is it impacting your daughter in 4-H club?
Well, even some of the members of her club who have had livestock animals, hogs or sheep, on some of the ranches have been told that they'll have to move them away for fear of there be a contamination issue. So it's even affected the kids in the 4-H program. Yeah, that's true.
So everybody's there.
Well, sure. And you know, and kind of dovetailing onto what Dick was saying is, you know, the big issue is the loss of consumer confidence in the produce. And it in this past instance, it was spinach, but it affected all the produce, the lettuce and leafy greens. It wasn't just all about spinach.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's of grave concern.
Right. Well, California grows 74% of the nation's lettuce, 69% of its spinach. From your perspective as a grower, how is this E. coli 015787, what kind of impact is it having on your industry?
Well, it's had great impact. I mean, you mentioned a number, $100 million lost, and that's
a big impact.
Yeah, of course, it's a huge impact. But I think for us, going forward, nobody in the industry wants to see anyone harmed by the products that we're producing.
Right, of course.
Absolutely not. And so it's really the loss of consumer confidence in our produce. And that's what we have to work hard to regain and demonstrate that we're doing everything possible to produce the safest produce.
Well, Tim Chilling, the Western Growers Association is developing the protocols, which I believe you call metrics, for the safest way, you're calling them best practices, best farming practices for growing and distributing leafy greens, and then backing those metrics with a marketing agreement that will govern the behavior of farmers that sign up with it. This leads us to believe that Western growers must know a lot about E. coli 015787. So could you tell us where this bacteria comes from and how it moves around the food chain?
Well, I'm first to back up. I'm the Vice President of Communications, so I'm the media guy.
Oh, okay.
much a scientific expert as others. I can tell you that the metrics that are being developed are things that have been that have come about in cooperation, actually in collaboration with the scientists and experts from not just Western Growers, but the academic community, UC Davis, also regulatory scientists, scientists for the regulatory agencies such as the FDA, CDC, and California Department of Food and Agriculture. And these really form the substance of what you refer to, the marketing agreement,
mm-hmm.
and eventually perhaps a marketing order also.
Well, before we pick that up, I'd like to come, we have to take a quick break, but we're going to come back to that when we return. Folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking with Tim Chelling, Vice President of Western Growers Association, Richard Nutter, former Monterey County Ag Commissioner and now consultant for the Santa Cruz County Farm Bureau, and Joe Pizzini, Vice President of Ocean Mist Farms. We're talking about E. coli 015787. And you, can agriculture protect us? 831-479-1080 or 800-624-2665. Right back. Do stay tuned. Hey, welcome back. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking with Tim Chelling, who's the Vice President of Western Growers. Ah, just a second here. Tim, can you call 1-831-479-1080? She's trying. Yeah, that's us. We're having a little bit of phone tag here with Tim Chelling, who's the Vice President for Western Growers Association. We're also talking with Richard Nutter, who's a former Monterey County Ag Commissioner, also a consultant for the Santa Cruz County Farm Bureau, and Joe Pizzini, who's Vice President for Ocean Mist Farms here in the Central California coast. Probably most famous for its artichokes, right?
Well, that's true.
But you also grow the leafy greens.
Absolutely. The whole cornucopia of produce.
Hey, why do we grow so many leafy greens here on the California Central Coast?
It's all about climate, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can produce all these during the summer months, and we have a long growing season and, you know, fertile soil, beautiful soil.
And what does the fog have to do with it?
Well, the fog keeps things nice and cool. It's our natural air conditioning.
That's the Ocean Mist Farms, right?
That's absolutely right.
And, of course, lettuce, you can grow almost anywhere, but you can only grow it for a little while because the heat makes it bolt, and away it's gone.
Well, if it gets too hot, that's true. But, again, we have a very long growing season from the end of March all the way to Thanksgiving.
So, and that's why it explains why California produces roughly 74% of the nation's lettuce, 69% of its spinach.
That's absolutely right. I mean, we have a long growing season, and we're able to do that where other areas aren't able to because of the weather.
We were talking a little bit with Tim Chelling before we lost him on the phone there, but we were talking about where this E. coli comes from and how it moves around. Dick, you've been in the fields for 40 years. Got any ideas? Do we have any ideas where this E. coli came from?
Well, I think they're thinking there's some livestock connection with cattle, and we've heard about wild pigs, and we've heard about birds, and quite a number of different wildlife, and I suppose the manure is a big factor in how that was used in certain farming practices, and so I think there's many ways it could have contaminated a particular area.
And we don't know how, really.
To the best of my knowledge, they haven't really determined how yet.
Okay. The Journal of Food Protection, which just came out, says that 3.6% of all beef cattle 3.4% of dairy cattle carry the E. coli 015787. And, boy, that's a lot. That's, when you think about it, that's a lot of cows that are carrying this, right?
It would seem so. I'm not sure of the science behind what they've produced, but...
That's checking a lot of cows, but...
I think in this investigation with the FDA and DHS into the spinach... It is something that they have concerns about.
Mm-hmm.
Our cattle and ruminant animals that can carry the 0157H7.
Okay, good. What about the other animals, the birds, the skunks? Is anybody pointing any fingers at them? I know that we were looking at wild pigs there for a while, and we did find the 0157 in the intestines of the wild animals.
I don't know of any research yet that would show that other animals carry 0157H7. As you've mentioned, they did find it in a pig, a feral pig,
mm-hmm.
And they know that it's carried by cattle.
Okay. Let's go to the phone right now while we're waiting for Tim Chilling to come back and talk with Richard. Richard, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hey, thanks, Mike.
You bet.
I wanted to ask you a question. It's been on my mind for a while now. And the question is do you think it's time for us to have field marshals? I'm serious now, Mike.
Field marshals?
I'm talking about scientific-type field marshals that would roam the fields, be paid by or be employed by Homeland Security, and going around testing the crops at random.
Huh. Well, isn't that what an ag commissioner is?
No, I mean a bunch of them.
Well, in response, Richard, what's been proposed is to have, at least in California, the California Department of Food and Agriculture to do inspections and to audit and verify farms through the marketing agreement. And so that's where you are talking about inspectors going to farms and doing exactly what you're talking about, inspecting.
Well, I mean on a 24/7 basis, watching out for terrorists that may come in and even lace the place with E. coli with a motor home or something, which could be done.
Well, this is the second call we've had already this hour.
Well, no, you guys keep talking about security and the food, and no. I keep seeing it on TV that you guys want to keep throwing money at another problem. You know, I mean, at another way of solving it, and that's not going to do it unless we actually have people out there testing the product, unless you guys want to invest in ozonators. All right, thank you, huh?
Uh-huh. Thanks, Richard. Well, that was essentially the second call that we've had so far bringing up the issue of terrorism, agro-terrorism.
Biosecurity.
Biosecurity. Tim Chilling, welcome back.
Thank you.
Sorry to have lost you there. We'll do our best not to lose you again.
Okay.
Tim, we were just asking you really quickly, do we know where the E. coli comes from? Do we know how it travels around the food chain for certain?
Well, that's literally the million-dollar question. You know, E. coli is a common bacterium.
Right.
As I think
it's ubiquitous, right?
Well, it is. It's in human beings. It is, you know, discovered in 1885 by a German pediologist or pediatrician,
and named E. coli,
named actually Escherich.
Ah,
I believe it is. So the E. coli.
He named this thing after himself.
The E is a capital E, period, mm-hmm. named after the individual who discovered this. Now the 0157 is a strain. Is basically, if you want to put it in science fiction terms, a mutation of common E. coli that we have in our bodies, that mammals have in their low intestines to help digest food, for instance. So it is, in essence, a mutation. And the question becomes, without going on too long, how this mutation, this 0157 strain, how it gets into food product. And produce, you know, we've been hit recently, but it's more common in meat and other products. And the question becomes, where does this come from? How can we pinpoint it, and how can we stop it, obviously?
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, you're the man. And Western Growers is the organization that's really collecting all of the intelligence on how best to do this and putting them together in a set of what you call metrics that farmers who sign up with a marketing agreement will have to adhere to. So where do these metrics begin? What do they look like?
The metrics, and they're posted on our website. They were just recently posted.
That would be WGA.com?
Right, correct, under the science and technology sector. What this is, basically the marketing agreement that is in place right now, that is spooling up, will be an agreement between handlers, in which all the handlers agree that they will not accept product from growers who do not follow specific food safety guidelines.
Okay, this has nothing. The agreement has nothing to do with the guidelines themselves.
The agreement is an old agricultural legal mechanism by which farmers and handlers and shippers can get together and talk to each other. It came about during the Depression,
mm-hmm.
so that people could talk to each other in agriculture, help about their product, how to sell it, what qualities would be the standard. And so they could talk to each other during the Depression without violating antitrust laws. And what Western Growers Board of Directors did on October 26th was to vote unanimously to initiate
this agreement,
marketing agreement, marketing order process in the state, and then eventually also at the federal level.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, but when we get back, I want to ask about the metrics
sure.
of and how that they are going to work. Folks, this is the Food Chain, Michael Olson. We will be right back. Please do stay tuned for E. coli 015787. Hey, we're back. We're talking E. coli 015787. We're talking with Tim Chelling, who's the Vice President, Western Growers Association. Dick Nutter, who's a former Monterey County Ag Commissioner, now consultant for the Santa Cruz County Farm Bureau, and Joe Pizzini, who's Vice President of Ocean Mist Farms. Before we left, Tim Chelling was telling us about the marketing agreement that has been put together that will essentially force farmers who sign up with it to comply with the procedures, protocols, or metrics of the best farming practices for leafy greens. But before we go on to what those best farming practices are going to be, I'd like to ask Dick Nutter, who has been in the fields as an ag commissioner for over 40 years. Dick, you must have worked with a lot of farmers, probably more farmers than anybody else I know on the entire face of the earth. But can you get farmers to actually agree and comply? I mean, farmers are so notoriously independent.
Well, I think we all agree that the people who farm the land are independent. That's the reason they're good stewards of the land, because they are independent and they take pride in what they do. And it is difficult to get consensus among many people, but when you have a common goal down the line, then you put some consequences of complying with this. If you want to succeed, if this is going to be economically viable, then you have these conditions in which they're going to have to comply with in order to implement them properly. So I think that with everybody's coming together and a main focus point on it, that you'll get compliance there.
Joe Pizzini, do you see everybody complying?
Yes. Yes, I think the marketing agreement, which is built around food safety, and it's probably the first agreement that's done that, I think there's an incentive to comply, and I think it's the marketplace. The marketplace is going to require you to comply, as it should.
So if you want to sell your leafy greens, you better have the seal.
That's correct.
Okay, Tim Chelling, looks like you've got a lot of compliant farmers out here ready to cooperate with this marketing agreement. Tell us about some of the best farming practices. What is this going to mean for farmers?
Well,
how do you grow leafy greens now?
Well, the fact of the matter is, and let me say this before I get into the detail, you know, this is not as if people invented food safety overnight. The fact of the matter is, and Joe and Dick can weigh in on this, that the procedures that are detailed here, many of these farmers, vast majority, are doing all of these things already, such as testing water.
Mm-hmm. So testing water is going to be one. We're looking for E. coli 15787, or are we looking for E. coli?
You're looking for, quote, pathogens. So mm-hmm. we can cover anything, such as, and again, I'm not a scientist, but any pathogens that are in the water. Obviously, E. coli is the subject of attention right now. But these procedures, very quickly, are things such as, how often do you test the water? Where do you test it? What do you test it for? If you get a certain part per million in the water testing at the wellhead, perhaps that's a yellow alert and you have to retest or clean the water. If another larger part per million may be a red alert and you have to stop using the water. How often and what do you clean utensils with? Those are the very kinds of specific things that are enumerated in what are essentially food safety procedures here.
Mm-hmm.
But again, as I said, a lot of this, and it, is under the state of California. This is not a Western Growers regulation.
Right.
This will become a state of California regulation. A lot of this
for those people who sign up with the agreement.
That's correct.
Right.
Now, eventually, then, hopefully, we will go to a marketing order, which at that point orders all of the farmers of the leafy green commodities to do things. This will not be just a to sign up.
So this is step number one.
This is also important, too. This is the first in a series of steps to really raise the food safety standards, which were good to begin with, to raise those standards from a gold standard to, say, a platinum standard. And as I said, many of the farmers in the state of California and other and Arizona, these people are doing things correctly, but this is to ensure uniformity and to also, again, restore the confidence of the consuming public in agriculture.
Okay, let's go to Bob, who is a farmer in California's great Salinas Valley. Bob, welcome to the Food Chain.
Good morning, Michael.
Pleasure to have you aboard. Fire away.
Okay. I just kind of wanted to like you a little bit, too. I know those three gentlemen pretty well that you're talking to right there, but the difference between where we have been and where we're going is not just the metrics. It's these metrics have been in place. We've been looking at these things. As a matter of fact, all of the salad bagging processors, the buyers of the product have really laid down some pretty strict laws over the last few years. But unfortunately, they've been voluntary for a lot of people, and they have been voluntary. The mm-hmm. difference between where we're going and where we've been is that it won't be voluntary anymore. Once the marketing agreement, marketing order process goes through, it's a mandatory deal. And what United Fresh is looking for, which you might discuss, is they're looking for a federal mandate that'll put the whole nation on the same playing field. And eventually, hopefully, anyone who imports a product to us will be living in by the same guidelines.
Okay. Kim Chilling, Western Growers Association, you mentioned this being a two-step process or an ongoing process. What happens when, if first there's an agreement and farmers may or may not sign up with the agreement, right?
Handlers.
I
mean, processors, handlers. This is the agreement applies to, quote, handlers.
Ah.
Now, the handlers bound together agree, quote, unquote, that they will not accept product from farmers who do not follow certain practices. So it's effectively...
Okay, so the handlers are actually the ones doing the enforcement here.
Well,
then.
The state of California is doing the enforcement mm-hmm. because a board will be appointed, and it can get very complicated. But
what happens if a farmer doesn't sign up with this?
If a handler doesn't sign up.
If
the handler doesn't sign up for this, there's a carrot and a stick here, no pun intended.
Mm-hmm.
The carrot is the seal, in essence, they call it a mark, which will certify that safe food safety mm-hmm. practices have been followed throughout the chain. And that's a very powerful kind of incentive.
So this mark will go on the handler's products.
It will go on...
Which may come from many different farmers all throughout California.
That's correct.
Okay.
So in essence, you're indirectly going to the farm all through the process. Then the order goes back and kind of as a second blanket, make sure that it covers all of the growers as well.
Okay.
Same thing, we have also voted to initiate that on a federal level. So
you're here with Bob. You want to take this to a federal level. Why?
That's correct. Well, the upstart of all this is really, you can get into all kinds of details, but what you're talking about really is a watershed event here in September with mm-hmm. the spinach E. coli outbreak. Mm-hmm. I say a watershed event because for agriculture and food safety in general in this country, that the intense focus on this is really going to raise food safety standards across the board, and that's good for the industry and good for the nation, really.
Uh-huh. Bob, do you agree?
I agree 100%. Yeah, Tim's right.
Okay, good. Folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson, you want to ride with us, Bob?
Sure.
Okay, well, hold on to you there. And folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking E. coli 015787. We're asking the question, can agriculture protect us from E. coli 015787? Curious to hear what you think. Phone numbers today, 800-624-2665, throughout the Food Chain, and also right here in the California Central Coast, we're at 831-479-1080. Do stay tuned, right back. Well, folks, if you think about it, there are a lot of servings being issued of leafy greens, salad mixes from the Central Coast. Gosh, we must be making, what, billions of
hundreds of billions of servings.
Hundreds of billions of servings every year go out of the out of California to, you know, the dinner plates around the country. Here we have one incident, two incidents, where this E. coli pathogen gets out, and now we're in a major tiz. And is it because we just know so much more and can track so much more quickly that we that this is happening?
And part of it is a reporting process. Mm-hmm. The reporting processes from states to the CDC is much more efficient than it used to be, as it should be. And I think the industry looks at this, and Tim Schilling said this, as the spinach incident being a watershed event. And that's very true, because it affected every spinach producer, every lettuce and leafy green producer across the whole country, no matter where you were. Everybody was out of business for a while.
Right.
So, you know, the industry knows how serious this is, you know, take responsibility for it. We got to, one outbreak is one too many, and that's how we have to view it.
Okay,
Michael,
folks.
Let me say something real quickly.
Okay, Tim, go ahead.
I think I want to maybe express the frustrations of the industry, too. I've come from the media. I was in the media, as you are, and, you know, I'm not one to do media bashing, but I think at the same time...
Well, you can go ahead and media bash.
No, I don't want to.
You wouldn't be the first one.
I know, but I don't believe in it. But I think there's also a frustration out here that says, look, while we're taking this extremely seriously, we're taking steps. But please, while you do this, put this in perspective. And the perspective is, as Bob referred to, there are literally billions of servings of leafy
right.
greens and other fruits and vegetables per week, if I'm being conservative there. But you're talking about statistics that are astoundingly safe. You know, airlines, no one talks about airlines. And the odds of being on a fatal or accident in an airline when you get on a plane are about 52 million to one. The industry, fresh fruits and vegetables, consuming those, it's many, many times better odds than getting on an airline flight. You're talking about hundreds of millions to one, probably, to have a chance of getting ill from eating something. And in the long run, the benefits far, far outweigh the risks. And if you had people stopping eating, halting their consumption of fruits and vegetables today, the illnesses and deaths that would result in the long run are probably in the, you know, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands compared to the incidents that have happened. I needed to just say that because I think it's also important to be fair as we go forward here.
Okay, yeah. Okay, I'm going to go around the table here and ask the question, can agriculture guarantee that this won't happen again when you institute these best farming practices? Can you guarantee that out of the billions of servings that California serves every year, that this will not happen again? Let's start with Chili Bob Martin from Real Farms down there in the Salinas Valley.
Well, I'll tell you what, Michael, as a matter of fact, that was part of my talk that I gave at the hearing, the CDFA hearing here,
right,
a couple of weeks ago, was that no, there's no way on God's green earth can we ever guarantee that. We can do a lot better, and we're gonna do better because it'll be mandated and verifiable. We'll have those marshals, those field marshals, like your previous caller was talking about. But one point I'd like to bring up, though, Michael, is that you know, you've got to have several states back in the Midwest and back East that are very terrible about reporting food illness outbreaks. And my statement is, where is this going to go in the future? It, you know, with technology getting better,
mm-hmm.
and
pressure from the government, from FDA and consumer advocates. You know, these people are going to be, these hospitals are going to be under the gun to produce more. I mean, they consider two people with the same illness coming into a hospital, that's a foodonosis outbreak, and it's got to be reported to other hospitals in the state, and consequently to the CDC, which then looks into it for about a week. It takes them several days to put the two and two together, and then it goes to the FDA. Then it's considered a major outbreak or whatever. But, you know, with these states finally coming into compliance, not compliance, I guess it's not the correct term, but starting to get online with like Minnesota and Wisconsin, who are two of the best, where are we going to be? I mean, it's we're going to be seeing more and more of these things.
That's the question I asked previously. Is this something new, or have we been going through this forever and didn't know about it?
We have been. We have
Joe, Joe Pizzini, let me ask you, can you do it? Can you guarantee that this won't happen again?
We can't guarantee that it'll never happen again, but we have to work towards it not happening.
Dick Nutter?
Well, I think what you see now is the entire California vegetable crop industry across the board putting their best foot forward, trying to come up with a procedure that will prevent this from happening again, but in actually preventing it from ever happening again, I don't think you can say that.
Tim Chilling?
No, I think the nature of this product is ironically the thing that makes it nutritious and beneficial is the fact that it is a raw product grown in an outdoor environment. You statistically can never guarantee zero outbreaks. And in fact, in the next year or so, you have a very heightened sensitivity in the system. So you will probably see within the next year, maybe months, another report of outbreak.
But okay, let me ask you this. When we come back from this break, I'm going to ask each of you the following question. If this happens again, what will happen to this new program of safety seals and marketing orders? Right back. Do stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Hey, welcome back. This is The Food Chain. We're going to go right to the phones, talk with Mary. Mary has a question. Fire away, Mary.
Hi, gentlemen. I want to thank you all because food is necessary for us, and there are farmers out there working very hard for us. But I think to compare airlines, the airline industry to the food industry is preposterous. In the first place, we make conscious decisions about getting on an airplane. Eating food is a lifeblood necessity. And the problem that I have with this also is that statistics can't be compared. People are dying from E. coli, but what you don't hear about is all of the people on kidney dialysis. And I bet there are hundreds, if not thousands of them. And so that's my problem. And I'll take your answers off the air.
Okay. Thank you, Mary. And we're going to go to our guests. We have Tim Chilling from Western Growers. We have Dick Nutter from the who's representing the Farm Bureau these days. We have Joe Pizzini from Ocean Mist Farms. And we have Chili Bob Martin from Real Farms down in the Salinas Valley. Boy, how do you respond to that?
Well, let me respond real quickly.
All right, Tim.
You know, first, I think that the no one, and rightfully so, has minimized what has happened here. You know, food safety is really considered a sacred trust with the public for this industry. And the fact that anyone was ill, let alone the numbers in this outbreak, really hit the people I've talked to emotionally very hard. Three deaths were confirmed.
Yeah.
201 illnesses just in the spinach outbreak, and that was just an assault, really, on the people of this industry, and I think they responded accordingly. No one at all wants to minimize the incidents of the events of the last several months, and they've proceeded accordingly.
So, Tim, let me ask you this. What if we go through all of this marketing agreement, we set up the best farming practices, we go through a marketing order, and we have another outbreak. It's traced right back to a bag that has the seal of approval on it, backed by the state of California and all of this stuff, and it's traced right back to us, and what's going to happen then?
Well, someone asked me, you know, if that happens, will the process of instituting better food safety standards, will that be accelerated? And my answer was that there's no acceleration left in the process here. We are going full bore, you know, the pedal is to the metal to bring about higher standards of food safety.
Right.
I think the answer is that you simply proceed and continue to try to develop better food safety standards.
Head down and keep going, right?
You best do the best you possibly can.
Michael, let me add to that. I think what it does do, the marketing agreement and the marketing order, would bring structure to food safety in a mandatory way, so that if there is another incident, there is a body, there's a mechanism for dealing with that from an industry perspective, rather than each individual company doing their own thing.
Dick?
Yeah, I believe that's the key to the whole issue, the fact that you do have these regulations in place which people absolutely have to comply with. If you're able to identify an area where it came from, then you're able to focus on that one particular area.
Bob Martin, what happens if this happens again?
Well, it's a tough question, and I think, you know, that what they just said was going to be my answer too: traceability, to be able to put a finger on it as soon as possible, so the whole industry isn't implemented in the whole thing. But Mike, I want to compliment you on picking three of the best right there to talk about this subject, and I got to give Joe tons of credit when he became chair of the board there at the Gore Shipper Association. Boy, did he grab a tiger by the tail.
Great timing,
done,
Joe.
He's done an awesome job, too. We've done a great job. We're really proud of him.
Well, thanks, Bob. Some of us are just lucky that way.
So what it boils down to is that we're doing the best we can, and that's all we can do. We can't do any better than the best we can do, right?
We work as hard as we possibly can, humanly possible, to do it.
All right, folks, thanks for tuning in The Food Chain. Stay tuned next week for more What's Eating What Radio right here on The Food Chain. And hey, be sure and remember, cheap food isn't. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.